Some soldiers fight for honor, some for glory. The death corps of Krieg fight for something else entirely, the slim hope that dying by the millions might just make up for one planet's past sins. In the nightmare future of Warhammer 40,000, where war never ends, there's one regiment of the Imperial Guard that has turned self-sacrifice into an art form. They are the death corps of Krieg, and this is their story. It all began over 1,500 years ago with the death of a world. Krieg was once a prosperous hive world in the Segmentum Tempestus, home to billions. But its rulers, a council of autocrats, grew corrupt and paranoid. They feared that the Imperium would strip away their power. In 433 and M40, the High Autocrat of Krieg declared independence from the Imperium of Man, essentially shouting that the Emperor was no longer his master. He renounced the Emperor and plunged Krieg into civil war. Most of the planet sided with this rebellion, except for a few holdouts loyal to the Emperor. The most significant loyalist stronghold was Hive Faragrad, commanded by Colonel Yurtin of the 83rd Krieg Regiment. Yurtin had strict orders. Krieg must not fall to heresy. But with the planet overrun by traitors and no hope of reinforcements arriving in time, he made a drastic decision. If the Emperor couldn't have Krieg, no one would. On the holy feast of the Emperor's ascension, Colonel Yurtin enacted his plan. In a display of unflinching, some might say insane, loyalty, he launched a massive counterstrike known as the Purging. This counterstrike consisted of unleashing Krieg's own stockpiles of atomic weapons upon its cities. Yes, he nuked his own planet to deny it to the enemy. For days, nuclear firestorms ravaged Krieg. Prosperous hive cities were reduced to radioactive craters. The planet's surface was scorched and poisoned, the atmosphere blackened with ash. Krieg became a tomb world in the making. Billions perished in the flames. It was arguably one of the most brutal acts of war in Imperial history, essentially a planetary suicide attack. But in Yurtin's mind, better a dead world than a disloyal one. And when the mushroom cloud settled, Krieg was a loyalist world again, in the sense that nothing was left alive that wasn't loyal. Amazingly, blowing up the planet wasn't the end of the fighting. The survivors, those lucky or unlucky enough to be in deep shelters or vaults, emerged into the nuclear wasteland and kept the war going. Yurtin and his loyalists had planned for this. They hunkered down in Faragrad's bunkers before unleashing the apocalypse. Many rebels survived in their own shelters, too. What followed was 500 years of grinding trench warfare across a radioactive hellscape. In the ash-choked ruins that had once been cities, loyalist and traitor forces engaged in a generations-long war of attrition. This was no longer about territory or resources. Those were all gone. It was a war of pure faith and will. Over five centuries, the loyalists, driven by unshakable faith in the Emperor, slowly but surely exterminated the traitors. Inch by inch, tunnel by tunnel, they cleansed Krieg of heresy at an unimaginable cost. The once thriving world became nothing but a charnel house of constant warfare. Ultimately, by the year 949 on M40, the Loyalists finally declared victory. Krieg was an Imperial planet once more, though at this point it was barely habitable, reduced to a toxic, irradiated husk. Out of these ashes, the Death Corps of Krieg was born. The survivors of Krieg, those who had fought for centuries in that underground war, emerged with a very particular outlook on life and death. They had sacrificed everything to prove their loyalty, and they weren't done yet. Krieg was now a cursed world, and its people felt a massive burden of shame and duty. They considered themselves and their descendants to be living on borrowed time, alive only by the Emperor's grace. The High Lords of Terra, the rulers of the Imperium, decreed that Krieg would serve the Imperium in the only way it really could now, as a factory for soldiers. The planet's entire infrastructure, what little remained of it, and its culture were refocused solely on producing troops for the Imperial Guard. By Imperial command, Krieg's tithe of soldiers was set to the maximum level, and the people of Krieg, fervently loyal and eager to atone for the past, embraced this fate without question. Krieg transformed into a true death world, not just because of its lethal environment, but because of its society. On the surface, the planet remained a radioactive wasteland. Humans could only survive outside with protective gear. So the population moved entirely underground, living in sprawling bunker cities and sealed manufactoria, often the same bunkers their ancestors had built during the Civil War. In these subterranean hives, every aspect of life revolved around war. There are no real civilians on Krieg. Every man and woman is effectively a soldier in training from birth. To keep up with the insane tithe of troops, Krieg employs methods many in the Imperium might find extreme or even heretical if they weren't so useful. They use technologies like Vitae wombs, artificial gestation chambers, to boost birth rates. In essence, they can grow babies in vats rapidly and efficiently, supplementing natural reproduction. They also enforce eugenics programs to ensure no genetic weakness or mutation, a constant risk on a fallout-blasted world, taints their offspring. The result of all this is staggering. It's said that over 50 million new guardsmen per year are raised, trained, and shipped off-world from Krieg's facilities. 50 million every year. That figure is almost unimaginable, but the Imperium has endless wars to feed, and Krieg pays its blood tithe in bulk. Children on Krieg are raised with one purpose: to fight and die for the Emperor. Their education consists of constant drills, survival training, and indoctrination into the Imperial Creed, the state religion devoted to the God Emperor. Any hint of disloyalty or weakness is brutally culled early, often along with the child displaying it. Training is conducted with live ammunition and real danger. Fatalities during practice are considered acceptable losses. Recruits are toughened by exposure to the planet's toxic surface, by live fire exercises in radioactive wastelands, by enduring hardships that would break even seasoned soldiers from other worlds. The goal is to weed out anyone who can't handle the absolute horror of the battlefront. By the time a Krieg youth is deemed ready for battlefield deployment, they have been completely stripped of any sense of self-preservation. They have been taught that their individual life means nothing compared to service to the Emperor. They carry a deep cultural guilt for the ancient betrayal of their ancestors, a shame that, in their minds, only a virtuous death in combat can absolve. This ethos is expressed in a common Krieg battlefield prayer, a litany recited as they prepare to attack. In life, war; in death, peace; in life, shame; in death, atonement. Those words encapsulate the Death Corps' philosophy. As long as they live, they fight, and they consider their life a state of sin and shame. Only in death, by giving their life for the Emperor, can they find peace and redemption. It's an extreme mindset, but everything about the Death Corps is extreme. The result of such upbringing is soldiers who are, for lack of a better term, fanatically fearless and grimly determined. A Krieg guardsman does not flinch under fire, does not complain, and certainly does not surrender. They will endure conditions that would break other regiments. They consider horrific casualties to be normal and expected. In battle, a Death Corps commander's strategy is often less about clever maneuvers and more about a simple calculation. Can we afford to lose more men than the enemy can? If yes, press forward. Victory is just a matter of time and bodies. Discipline in the Death Corps is absolute. They follow orders without hesitation, even if that order is to charge straight into certain death, especially then. Individual ambition or survival instinct simply do not factor in. In fact, showing too much self-preservation might mark a Krieger as defective. They don't even care about accolades or fame. Unlike some Imperial Guard units, you won't find Krieg soldiers bragging about their exploits or posing for propaganda picked casts. They fight, they die, and their deaths are just numbers in a Munitorum ledger, quickly replaced by the next wave of reinforcements. It goes to an extreme where Death Corps troops often don't use personal names at all, just rank and serial number. The idea of being remembered as a hero or receiving medals is alien to them. In Krieg thinking, doing something truly heroic, say charging a machine gun nest alone or holding a bunker to the last man, is, to a Krieg soldier, nothing more than doing his duty. Bravery is expected. Cowardice is the only sin. To outsiders, this makes the Death Corps seem like emotionless automatons. They kind of are, by design. Unsurprisingly, this attitude makes the Death Corps a bit unnerving to their allies. Other Imperial citizens, even hardened soldiers, who meet Kriegers often describe them as ghostly or already dead. They are typically quiet, never removing their ominous gas masks. Those filter mask respirators with round lenses that hide any glint of humanity in their eyes. Part of that is necessity. On Krieg, you can't go outside without a mask, so they wear them almost their whole lives. But it's also cultural. There are stories of Krieg soldiers refusing to take off their rebreather masks, even in safe zones or aboard ships, as if they're more comfortable being faceless. The sound of their muffled breathing and the emotionless gaze of their mask can be downright creepy. They rarely speak unless spoken to, and their idea of humor is practically non-existent. To many normal troops, fighting alongside the Death Corps feels like fighting alongside an army of the damned or the living dead. Now, let's talk about how the Death Corps of Krieg fight, because it's one thing to say they're fearless, and another to see what that actually means on the battlefield. The Death Corps are specialists in siege warfare and attrition battles. Imagine the worst trench warfare of the 20th century. Endless muddy trenches, barbed wire, machine gun nests. Then throw that into the far future with lasers, tanks, and monstrous enemies, and you have a typical Krieg campaign. They excel in protracted meat grinder engagements that other forces dread. When a Krieg regiment enters a war zone, the first thing they often do is start digging. Every Kriegsman carries an entrenching tool, basically a shovel, and they know how to use it. They will turn a patch of ground into a web of trenches, bunkers, and firing pits faster than seems possible, often under heavy enemy fire. They've been raised literally digging in radioactive dirt, so digging a trench while shells fall around them is second nature. Patience is one of their virtues. They are perfectly willing to besiege an enemy for months or years, if that's what it takes, all the while enduring hardship and enemy attacks. Artillery is the cornerstone of Death Corps warfare. They love their big guns, mortars, howitzers, earthshaker cannons, siege mortars. If it launches high explosives across long distances, the Krieg probably have a whole company of it. A Krieg assault typically begins with a massive artillery bombardment. They will pound the enemy's lines day and night, often for days on end, until the landscape is torn to pieces. The air will be filled with shrapnel, high explosive blasts, and poison gas. Yes, poison gas. The Death Corps will absolutely use chemical weapons if it gives them an edge. Their own troops are prepared, of course. They fight in sealed gear with gas masks so they can advance through zones of nerve gas or choking fumes without a second thought. The enemy, if they don't have similar protection, will die, coughing their lungs out. To the Death Corps, that's just efficient warfare. after the preliminary shelling has done all it can, cratered the ground, cut the barbed wire, hopefully blown up some bunkers and shaken the defenders, the infantry assault begins. And this is where the legend of the Death Corps is truly earned. They will climb out of their trenches and advance across no man's land into the teeth of enemy fire, in perfect discipline. Instead of running away from machine guns, they march steadily towards them. Their infantry attacks are often described as waves, and for good reason. The first wave might be the grenadiers, veteran shock troopers with better armor and weapons, tasked with getting to the enemy trenches or fortifications and blowing a hole. Right behind them come wave after wave of regular infantry, hundreds of guardsmen in thick greatcoats, las rifles in hand, bayonets fixed, advancing without breaking formation. Picture that from the defender's perspective. You've been shelled for 3 days straight. Half your buddies are dead or deaf, or cowering in a bunker. The shelling lifts. You peer over the parapet of your trench, and here come the Krieg. Lines of figures in tattered greatcoats and gas masks emerging from smoke and fog, stepping over craters and barbed wire, moving steadily forward. You open fire, mow down dozens. They don't stop. They just keep coming, stepping over the bodies of those who fell ahead of them. Maybe they're even chanting something under their breath as they advance, that litany of sacrifice, perhaps. It's terrifying because it's like fighting an army of zombies that feel no fear or pain. When the Death Corps reach the enemy trench or fortification, the fighting becomes brutally up close. They excel at close quarters combat in these conditions. They'll lob grenades into bunkers, storm in with combat blades and sharpened entrenching shovels. A favorite weapon of theirs in assaults is the flamer, basically a flamethrower, which is perfect for flushing enemies out of dugouts and tunnels. There are accounts of Krieg soldiers using flamers, and even more horrific weapons like Phosphex, a kind of incendiary gel that burns and never stops, to clear out trench lines. It's not pretty, but it's effective. The Death Corps approach every battle with a simple calculus. Take the objective, no matter the cost. If one attack fails, they will do it again and again, until either the objective is taken or they are all dead. Retreat is not in their vocabulary unless a higher commander explicitly orders it. In fact, this stubbornness can be a double-edged sword. There have been times when Death Corps units kept pushing an assault that was strategically unwise simply because no one told them to stop. They just don't quit. To mitigate such issues and coordinate with more conventional tactics, commissars are attached to Krieg regiments. But interestingly, the role of the commissar in the Death Corps is almost inverted from the norm. Commissars are those zealous officers meant to enforce discipline and loyalty, often by fear, executing cowards or deserters if needed. In a typical guard unit, a commissar's main job is to prevent panic and keep the men fighting. In a Krieg unit, panic is not the problem. The men will fight and die regardless. Instead, commissars in Krieg regiments sometimes have to restrain the Kriegers from rushing headlong at inopportune moments. They act as tactical advisors, voices of reason to temper the Krieg officers' eagerness to sacrifice everything for a minor gain. It's quite ironic. A commissar might find himself yelling, "Hold your positions, you fools!" at Krieg soldiers who would otherwise charge to the last man when a strategic withdrawal is more sensible. The Death Corps, of course, obey. They are nothing if not obedient. But one imagines the commissar shaking his head in disbelief that he's urging guardsmen not to needlessly die. Another grim aspect of Krieg warfare is how they handle casualties, both their own and others. This falls to a specialist role in the regiment. The quartermaster. A Death Corps quartermaster is a unique officer who serves as a battlefield medic, supply officer, and also a sort of battlefield priest. But their idea of medicine can be merciless. The quartermaster and their retinue roam the battlefield during and after combat to recover equipment and assess the wounded. If they find a wounded Krieg soldier who can quickly be patched up and sent back to the fight, they'll do that, applying field dressings or stimulant injections to get him on his feet. However, if a soldier is too severely wounded, say he's lost a limb and is bleeding out, or his radiation suit is torn and he's been contaminated, the quartermaster will not waste time trying to save him. Instead, the wounded guardsman is given the Emperor's peace. In plain terms, the quartermaster will execute him, swiftly and honorably, usually with a bolt pistol or a lethal injection. A short prayer might be said as this happens, commending the soldier's soul to the Emperor. Then the quartermaster's servitors and assistants will strip the corpse of any gear that can be reused, the rifle, ammunition, dog tags, etc. This sounds horrifying to us, but to the Death Corps, it's standard procedure. A soldier who can't fight is as good as dead already, and resources are too scarce to spend on someone who's not combat effective. Better to give him a noble death than use his rifle for the next man. Imagine being a normal guardsman witnessing this. In some wars, allied regiments have been appalled by Krieg quartermasters. There are tales, perhaps exaggerated, perhaps not, of non-Krieg medics trying to save wounded men, only to see a Krieg quartermaster execute those same men because they judged the wounds too severe. In one particularly chilling anecdote, after a battle, a Krieg watchmaster, essentially a sergeant, was calmly draining the blood from some badly wounded soldiers, presumably to salvage it for transfusions or some other purpose. Other guardsmen stumbled upon this scene and were mortified. The Krieger's response was reportedly something along the lines of, "Waste not. The Emperor's currency must be spent wisely." Whether or not that exact quote is real, it captures the mindset. They don't see anything as too gruesome if it serves the war effort. All of these factors, the fearless assaults, the unyielding defense, the merciless pragmatism, make the Death Corps of Krieg both incredibly effective and sometimes difficult to work with. Even within the brutal Imperium, there are those who find the Death Corps too extreme. Case in point, their run-in with the Salamanders. During a campaign on the world of Hesfer Seged, the Imperium faced a separatist insurgency. The Salamanders, a Space Marine chapter known for their compassion towards civilians and relatively humane approach, were deployed alongside several Imperial Guard units, including the Death Corps. Captain Xuan Lo of the Salamanders advocated for a precise strike to decapitate the rebel leadership, followed by offering the remaining defeated rebels a chance to repent and surrender. Essentially, he wanted to punish the leaders, but spare those who would lay down arms, showing a measure of mercy. The Salamanders have always been big on not wantonly killing civilians or even defeated foes, at least by Space Marine standards. The Death Corps of Krieg had a very different idea of how to handle a rebellion: absolute annihilation. From the Krieg perspective, if a population rises up, you make a brutal example of them, so it never happens again. Kill every rebel, and maybe a lot of bystanders too, for good measure. Then reduce their cities to dust. You can see how this philosophical difference would cause friction, and it did. At one point in the campaign, Captain Xuan Lo and his Space Marines were in the middle of clearing a hab block, basically a giant apartment complex, floor by floor, looking for insurgents, taking some prisoners, likely trying to avoid killing any innocents trapped inside. The Krieg commanders saw that this hab block was harboring rebels and, true to form, decided not to bother with delicacy. They opted to eliminate the entire block in one blow by bombarding it with artillery. And so they did. They shelled the building while the Salamanders were still inside it, demolishing the entire hab block. The structure collapsed in flames, crushing everyone inside, insurgents, civilians, nearly a Space Marine squad along with them. Now, Space Marines are incredibly tough, and salamanders in particular are hard to kill. Xuanlo and his Marines survived, battered and angry, but alive, digging themselves out of the rubble. The captain was livid. This was a blatant disregard for coordination and for the lives of his men, not to mention any civilians the salamanders might have been trying to protect at that moment. Xuanlo immediately confronted the Krieg commander as soon as he emerged from the ruins. There was a shouting match. Well, mostly one-sided, since I imagine the Krieg officer just stood there stoically while an 8-foot-tall superhuman in green power armor yelled at him. Other guardsmen present witnessed something they never expected, genuine fear in the eyes of Krieg officers. These are men who don't blink at a death sentence, yet here they were, visibly uneasy, as an enraged Space Marine chewed them out. Apparently, even a Kriegsman has sense enough to be afraid when a Space Marine captain is threatening to rip your head off. Not surprisingly, after that incident, the rest of the campaign was carried out under the Salamander's direction. The Death Corps complied, presumably through gritted teeth behind their masks, curbing their more indiscriminate tactics. When the Separatists were finally defeated, the two forces parted on very frosty terms. The Salamanders, who are among the friendliest of the Emperor's angels, were appalled by Krieg's methods, and the Kriegers in turn saw the Salamanders as foolishly soft-hearted. It was a clash of mentalities. The interesting takeaway, even in the Imperium, which is not exactly gentle, the Death Corps stand out as especially unforgiving. When even a Space Marine known for burning heretics alive says, "Whoa, you guys are a bit much," you know the Krieg have carved out a special niche. Now that we've covered their origins and mindset, let's look at some of the Death Corps of Krieg's most famous battle engagements. These stories really illustrate what they're all about. The one that everyone tends to bring up first is the Siege of Vrax. Vrax was an Imperial armory world, basically a planet-sized munitions depot that turned into an apocalyptic quagmire of a war. The trouble began when Cardinal Zafon, a high-ranked member of the Ecclesiarchy, the Imperial Church, went rogue. He established himself on Vrax, stirred up the population with fiery anti-imperial rhetoric, and essentially declared the planet independent. Since Vrax was a stockpile of weapons and ammunition, this was an intolerable situation for the Imperium. But it wasn't going to be easy. The traitors were heavily armed and dug in. The task of reclaiming Vrax fell to the Death Corps of Krieg. The Imperial forces assembled the 88th Siege Army, comprised of 30-plus Krieg regiments, tens of thousands of Krieg troops, under the command of Lord Commander Suilka. If it was going to be a siege from hell, who better than the Krieg to prosecute it? Still, I doubt anyone realized just how hellish it would become. The Siege of Vrax lasted for 17 standard years of non-stop war. 17 years. Entire Imperial Crusades have been fought and finished in less time. The Death Corps landed on Vrax and established siege lines around the vast complex of fortifications that ringed the planet's citadel. Vrax had been fortified to the brim. Trench networks, bunkers, minefields, artillery emplacements. And the traitors had millions of ammunition shells and weapons to keep those defenses lethal. The war quickly devolved into the purest trench warfare stalemate one can imagine. The Death Corps would bombard a line, attack, seize some ground, then face a fresh enemy strongpoint and have to start over. Vrax was basically concentric rings of defensive lines, and the Krieg had to chew through them one by one. They dug their own trenches and bunkers as they advanced, turning the surface of Vrax into a patchwork of craters, chemical wastelands, and corpse-choked trenches. The fighting was savage beyond belief. Both sides employed chemical weapons extensively. Clouds of toxin and corrosive gas drifted over the battlefield. The Krieg, of course, had no problem pressing through it in their sealed suits. Many Vraxian renegades died writhing from gas, but they gave as good as they got, using gas shells on the Krieg in return. The sky was usually dark with the smoke of constant explosions. The very ground was poisoned. It was total war in every sense. And it got worse. After years of fighting, the taint of chaos grew strong on Vrax. Cardinal Zaphon became a pawn of chaos. Some say Nurgle, the plague god, was his patron. He declared a holy war against the Imperium and called in allies. That's when the heretical space marines started showing up. Traitor Astartes from various chaos legions slipped onto Vrax to support the rebels. Warbands like the World Eaters, corn-worshipping berserkers, and the Alpha Legion, masters of infiltration and misdirection, among others. The war that was already grinding the Imperial Guard down now had elements of the Chaos Space Marines, which is the last thing any guardsman wants to see charging at them. The traitors also summoned demonic entities, in particular powerful servants of Nurgle. One notable fiend was a grotesque demon prince known as Uraka. In life, he'd been a corrupt cardinal himself, now ascended as a bloated demon. With demons on the field, the Imperium escalated further. The Inquisition dispatched the Grey Knights, a secretive chapter of space marines who specialize in slaying demons, to Vrax. Additionally, loyalist space marine chapters, like the Dark Angels and Red Scorpions, sent strike forces to eliminate key targets, such as the rebel command bunker. So, by the late stages of Vrax, the Death Corps found themselves fighting not just human rebels, but actual superhuman chaos marines and hellish demons. And here's the thing. They never faltered. They died in droves, yes. But the line never broke. Whenever a section of trench was overrun by howling corn berserkers, the Krieg would counterattack and win it back, even if it meant melee combat with 8-foot-tall lunatics wielding chain axes. Whenever a great unclean demon of Nurgle oozed forth spreading disease, the Krieg would hold position and pour La Fire into it until it fell. And if smallpox-like plagues started ripping through their ranks, well, they kept fighting until they literally couldn't. This dogged persistence allowed the war to continue until reinforcements could tip the balance. In the final years of the siege, the Imperials managed to push into the central citadel of Favrix. The renegade Cardinal Zaphon was finally killed, either by a Vindicare assassin's bullet, or cut down by space marines, or perhaps by the demons he had bargained with. Accounts vary on his end. The remaining traitor forces were eventually annihilated or dispersed. Vrax was officially declared pacified in 830 Bommel M41. The cost of this victory? The casualty figures were staggering. Over 14 million Imperial Guardsmen were killed in the Siege of Brachis, the vast majority of them Krieg. 14 million soldiers gone to take a single planet. To put that in perspective, that's more than the population of many Imperial worlds. And that's just on the Imperial side. The traitors likely lost a similar number, though Chaos isn't known for keeping accurate body counts, and demons don't exactly submit after-action casualty reports. Virtually the entire surface of Vrax was left uninhabitable, contaminated by toxins and sowed with bones and war debris. For any other force, such losses would be unthinkable. For the Death Corps of Krieg, it was the ultimate validation of their doctrine. They had achieved victory through sheer attrition and sacrifice. There's a morbid joke that after Vrax, the Emperor surely must have forgiven Krieg for its old rebellion. I mean, what more could they do to prove themselves? But ask a Krieger and they'd likely say the debt isn't paid yet. In their eyes, no matter how many die in the Emperor's name, it's never truly enough. They'll always volunteer, or rather be volunteered, for the next bloodbath. and volunteer they have. The Death Corps of Krieg have fought in countless wars since Vrax. Another example, the Third War for Armageddon, a massive conflict where the Orc warlord Ghazkul Thraka invaded the industrial hive world Armageddon. 5 Krieg regiments were sent to reinforce the defenders. Armageddon was a hellish war in its own right. The planet is a toxic, polluted furnace, swarming with billions of rampaging orcs. The Death Corps regiments there fought in the ash wastes and hive cities alongside the Armageddon Steel Legion, the local guard. To the Kriegers, fighting orcs might actually have felt like a nice change of pace. Here was an enemy who also loved to charge straight into the meat grinder, who wouldn't stop coming until either they or you were dead. In a grim way, the Death Corps and the orcs were made for each other. Neither would ever back down. And indeed, on Armageddon, the Krieg forces performed with their usual valor. They plugged gaps in defenses, launched counteroffensives to recapture lost zones, and generally impressed everyone with their relentlessness. By the war's end, Armageddon was essentially a stalemate. The orcs were still on the planet, but their big offensive had been thwarted. The Death Corps units took horrendous casualties in the process, as expected. But every position they were assigned to hold, they held. The Death Corps have also waged war against more exotic threats. Take the Tyranids, extragalactic swarms of bioengineered monsters that devour all life. On worlds like Tarsis Ultra, when a Tyranid hive fleet attacked, the Death Corps were there in the defensive lines. They held the trenches against living waves of chitin and claw. It's said that at the Battle of Tarsis Ultra, Krieg regiments fought shoulder to shoulder with Ultramarines, elite Space Marines, and local PDF, and that the Kriegers never faltered, even as gargantuan Tyranid creatures smashed into their lines. They'd take losses and just quietly call up reserves and counterattack. One observer commented that the Death Corps fought the Tyranids like they were fighting other humans, with massed laser gun volleys and bayonet charges. And bizarrely, it worked, at least long enough for the Space Marines to do their job. The Tyranids expected fear. The Krieg had none. One of the most grueling campaigns the Krieg have been involved in is the Orphean War against the Necrons. The Necrons are a race of ancient, soulless androids with terrifying weapons that can flay a human to atoms in seconds. Worse, Necrons can repair themselves. You blast one apart, it might just reassemble unless completely destroyed. In the late 41st millennium, Necron forces awoke in the Orpheus sector and began exterminating Imperial colonies. 2 full Krieg armies, millions of troops, were dispatched to the Orphean War to try to stall the Necrons until heavier reinforcements could arrive. The war was a nightmare. In open battle, Necron phalanxes would mow down charging guardsmen with ease, and when a Necron soldier was killed, often it would just phase out and later revive. The Death Corps being the Death Corps, their response was simply to charge anyway and keep shooting until the Necrons stayed down. At first, this led to appalling losses. Whole regiments were vaporized trying to assault Necron lines head-on. But the Death Corps did adapt. They're not completely mindless. They learned that you have to combine tactics, massive long-range artillery bombardments to soften the Necrons, who, while they self-repair, can be temporarily knocked out of action or buried, followed by assaults to get in among them at close quarters. Necrons are tough, but even they can be overwhelmed in close combat if you throw enough bodies at them. At one critical engagement, the Battle of Amara Prime, the Death Corps actually managed to halt a Necron advance by essentially sacrificing multiple regiments in a fighting withdrawal that slowed the Necron's push to a crawl. This gave time for Space Marines of the Minotaur's chapter to target the Necron command structure and destroy the key overlords controlling that offensive. Strategically, it was a victory. Tactically, it looked like an absolute bloodbath, because it was. But that's how the Death Corps wins. Bleed, die, inch forward. By the end of the Orphean War, Imperial analysts estimate that the Krieg forces suffered over 60% casualties. Yet, thanks to their stubborn defense, the Necron expansion was stalled and eventually contained. Once again, the Death Corps did what was necessary at the cost of their own lives. Even in the current era, which, if you can believe it, is even darker and more chaotic than before, with the galaxy torn in half by a gigantic warp rift, the Death Corps continue to serve as the Imperium's blunt instrument in apocalyptic battles. When the Nachmund Gauntlet, a key corridor through the Great Warp Storm, was under siege by Chaos forces, over 100 Krieg regiments were thrown into those battles to hold crucial worlds. Essentially, they were used to plug holes in reality with their own bodies. And they did it. Gladly. In the ongoing Octarius War, a horrific three-way war between orcs and Tyranids orchestrated and then regretted by the Imperium, the Death Corps are heavily involved in containing that mess. Only the Krieg would volunteer to march into a war zone crawling with billions of orcs and Tyranids and try to stem the tide. It's the ultimate no-win scenario, but that has never stopped them. Throughout all these campaigns, a few things remain constant. The Death Corps of Krieg will follow orders without question. They will endure losses that would break anyone else, and they will never, ever give up until either they achieve victory or they are all dead. There's a phrase sometimes uttered in the ranks of the Imperial Guard. If you need something held, send in the Cadians. If you need something taken, send in the Catatatians. If you need something destroyed utterly, and don't care how many lives it costs, send in the Krieg. It's grim, but it's true. The Death Corps of Krieg represent the extreme end of the Imperial Guard's ethos that human lives are the Emperor's currency. Krieg will expend lives by the million to purchase victory, and they don't do it blindly or stupidly. It's with methodical, relentless efficiency. They have turned the act of dying for the Emperor into a science. In the end, the Death Corps of Krieg are the Imperium's ultimate weapon of attrition. They turn the very inevitability of death into a tool for victory. They are feared by their enemies, respected, and sometimes feared by their allies, and utterly devoted to a cause they know will kill them. In the grim darkness of the far future, where there is only war, the Death Corps of Krieg have found their perfect place. On the front lines, where the fighting is fiercest and life expectancy is shortest. Because for them, that's what life is. An opportunity to find redemption in the final moment of sacrifice. And if the cost of victory is everything, every ounce of flesh and blood, the Death Corps of Krieg will pay it without hesitation. After all, they have a lot of sins to atone for, and only their deaths will suffice.